American born along with you for the next 60. Chris Johnston at the bottom of the hour from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Noted marathoner, we should probably put out there as well. Borny, how are you today?
I'm good. I think we can say CJ is a marathoner.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if noted marathoner. I mean...
Okay. Off the top of your head, how many friends or colleagues of yours can you name who runs marathons or who has run a marathon?
Well, I believe Lance has in our ear, our technical director.
Lance Kennedy, absolutely.
You know, Jeff, I kind of run in an athletic circle. I know a lot. A dozen? Give me a dozen.
Do you know a dozen people that have run marathons?
I would say so, yeah. By the way, I'm not making the claim it's easy. It's not something I've ever done or think I could do.
Yeah. I always keep pushing the can down the road. Like, I've done a bunch of halves before. I've never done the full. And I always say, one day I'll do it. Good on CJ. CJ's done like a dozen of these things.
Oh, has he really?
This wasn't CJ's first.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did not mean to come on the air and diminish what CJ had done in the slightest. That was not my goal. I would not have someone go, who's a marathoner? And go, well, you know who's a noted one? Chris Johnston.
Noted marathoner. That's right. Amongst our colleagues, like, he's the guy. That's it. Good on CJ. So bottom of the hour, he joins us. And we'll talk about a lot of things going on around the NHL, probably namely the lack of playoff races right now. Now it's sort of all about seeding and positioning, and there's only really one race, and that's Nashville and Dallas. And man, that Eric Halla goal was huge. What's that?
You don't like the Flames?
No, I'm with you now. That Edmonton game was it.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, that Edmonton game was final nail. The thing is, like, they've had too many chances.
They have.
Right? Come here, go away. They had too many chances. That's it. Done. Now the only question is, can Montreal catch Winnipeg?
That's actually a fun conversation. I don't know. It's funny because we were like, can Montreal blow this whole thing yet? But man, Winnipeg sure can't find their footing, can they?
Losers of six in a row. Now they do get Adam Lowry back tonight. Brassois gets a start. It's Winnipeg and Ottawa. But this has been a whole weird situation going back to those pair of games against the Maple Leafs, which would have kicked off the tailspin for the Winnipeg Jets. It's been, you know, high-profile goaltender gets the hook. High-profile goaltender shares his feelings about it. Mark Scheifele gets sat down, shares his feelings about it. So it's been kind of bumpy. And, you know, you go back to trade deadline, and, you know, Winnipeg did pick up Jordy Benn as a trade deadline acquisition. We know that Kevin Cheveldayoff was trying to make a move for Jamie Oleksiak, the big defenseman from the Dallas Stars. That did not happen. And perhaps in his mind, he's thinking maybe things would be different if we would have been able to make that thing happen. But I don't know what happens here between Montreal and Winnipeg. Like, my instinct says that Winnipeg is too good to blow that spot. Mm-hmm. But really, well, why not, Merrick? Like, it's a freak year. Why not? Yeah. What do you think?
Well, the swings in momentum feel like they happen hard in the shortened season. Like, they're big highs and big lows. And you know, if Montreal could find something here for a little run of time heading into the playoffs, you know, that would obviously go a long way. And I don't think it's out of the question. There's enough talent there on that roster that, you know, it's not like they're a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. So it is possible. Winnipeg going through a tough time. As you're talking about Oleksiak, I just had a flashback of, like, boy, a big defenseman on that team would have been good. Maybe like a Dustin Byfuglien. Imagine if they still had Byfuglien.
I know, great, dude. Trust me. Like, that's the big one. Like, as much as they hit the home run with the Trouba deal, and they really did themselves a nice bit of business there, man, you remove someone like Dustin Byfuglien from the lineup, and like the effects are felt for years. Because he was a freak. Like, nobody played like that.
Yeah.
Nobody did. Nobody at all.
He was just an absolute beast, just so dangerous all over the ice. So, anyway, he's missed. But, yes, this Winnipeg Jets team has a lot of pieces still. It's, you know, we saw the Leafs, what they have a stretch of this season, like 0-8-1 or something. Like, you know, they had their terrible run too. It happens. But it just feels a little worse for Winnipeg because it's so close to playoffs, because it's at the position where they've been so solid in Hellebuyck. And, you know, Ehlers is obviously a huge one too.
That's a big loss. Okay, so we'll get on that page with CJ at the bottom of the hour and talk about what's happening around the NHL as well. Before that, 5-1 is the final score on Saturday. Austin Matthews with a pair, 37 and 38. Marner was outstanding. Like, I don't know how much more we can gain from by having a conversation about Saturday that we haven't talked about, you know, so relentlessly true. Here on the show pretty much every single day after the Maple Leafs play recently. They've won 5 games in a row. They're going for 6th in a row now. You know, at this point, it's like, all right, pad the stats, try to, you know, you've already clinched. Now you're trying to clinch top in the division as well. I don't know. Before we get into talking about Toronto-Montreal tonight, anything for you stand out from Saturday, or did it sort of just go as expected?
Well, it went as expected, but I think the topic now is, what do they do now? What do they do differently? Like, they're going to play Montreal, is it 3 or 4 times?
Three times.
End of the season. Knowing they're very, very likely to play them in the first round of playoffs, like, they're not going to surprise Montreal in game one of the postseason with who they are, what they like to do, but will they change something up heading into those games? You'd think if you had, say, a new power play breakout, or if you had a certain thing, a matchup that you would really like, say you want a line versus a certain line on the other team, that you're not going to show them over the next 3 games what it is you're going to do in playoffs. So I'm interested in the disparity between what it is they've done, what they want to do in these 3 games, and what it is they want to do in playoffs.
You know, that is interesting, too, because Jake Muzzin talked about this morning. You know, we have this sort of like mini 3-game series here against the Toronto Maple Leafs, against the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, a lot of this is going to be preparation for a potential, again, if Montreal doesn't catch Winnipeg for third, at which point the whole plan is scuttled. But this is going to be a scenario whereby the Toronto Maple Leafs want to do some things against the Montreal Canadiens, but considering their position, like, to your point, I don't know how much you want to show a hand here. Like, I know that Sheldon Keefe's a notorious, you know, he'll mix up players on different lines. Like, to me, this mini 3-game set against the Montreal Canadiens is almost ripe for Sheldon Keefe to say, let's change some things here. Let's try some things here. I don't want to show too much.
Well, I'm curious to see. Like, I think Nick Foligno will get run with Tavares and Nylander. I don't know if lines are out for the next game here, but I think they'll see move Foligno around. You know, he's played his first 4 games with Marner and Matthews, which good to get familiar in a spot like that, but also good to say, hey, we may use you at center, we may use you on the second line, we may use you in the third line. I think you got to give him a little taste in those spots before you just throw him in there in playoff series. So I think they'll move him around, and then it's a matter of, what do they do with the decor? Like, Sandin is making a case to stay in.
Oh, you know, boy, ever.
Yeah, you know, where are you going to play him now? It's, you know, I think the next 5 games are a bit of a tryout to see who's going to get that spot game one. Once Bogosian comes back, you know, he's pushing for Dermott's job here, particularly if he can be effective on the power play.
Well, listen, you work with Sheldon Keefe. Give us the psychological makeup here. Like, Rasmus Sandin, say he just continues on this trajectory over the next few games. Mm-hmm. Bogosian comes back and the playoffs start. We know coaches are always not exactly thrilled to put more kids in the lineup, and especially not come playoff time. What's the default setting here for Sheldon Keefe?
Well, I think there's been an evolution with Kyle and Sheldon, where coming up, you know, through the Sioux, they wanted to be different. They wanted to be always with the youth and the speed and the talent and the excitement and the energy, and we're going to do it a different way from the rest of the NHL. And, you know, they've put their best foot forward in that regard. But I think they saw, you know, my 2 years with the Marlies, we won 5 playoff rounds and went deep in the 6th, but we never got over the hump. And then the next year they added a number of older veteran guys to that core, and they won the Calder Cup. So then they come, you know, they move up to the NHL. They kind of go with the kids, the core, you know, of the team against Boston. They don't get over the hump in Columbus. Then they add all these veteran guys, and they're seeing success more than they've ever had before. I believe they're evolving to recognize the value of experience and having been there, and I think that goes, that's a check mark in Travis Dermott's favor, that he's been around, he's played in those series, he's not going to be learning and making mistakes in moments that are crucial for the team. So Sandin's been awesome. I'm not saying they're not going to go with him in game one, but I bet you right now that their hedge is on the experience side.
Mitch Marner, there was one play, it's the second Matthews goal on Saturday, where I say to myself, like, if you want to look at a situation where Mitch Marner shows you how he's different from everybody else in the league, I'm painting with a wide brush here, but how he's different than like 95% of the players in the NHL. It's that second goal. On the forecheck, puck turns over. True or false, most players in the league force that pass to Foligno instead of waiting for Matthews. Now, you might look at it and say, well, his default setting is look for 34. Okay, I get that. But how many guys would have just forced a pass to Foligno who had coverage on him because that's the thing you're supposed to do, get it to the person who's closest to the net instead of waiting that split second and getting it to Austin Matthews?
No, you're right. He's special in that regard. There's a funny thing that happens like at a certain confidence level where you realize that by hanging on to the puck, like some people skate at you defensively as a threat. Like they're not actually coming out to get you. They're just coming out to show you they're going to get you so you'll move the puck. A lot of these guys, Marner excels at hanging on to the puck so long because he knows guys aren't always coming to get him. He just has this confidence, and then things open up when guys kind of feign defense at him. So it's a confidence thing where he's able to find that next wave, the late guy, the wide guy. He sees passes that other people don't, and part of it is just having that extra bit of patience and confidence.
You know who talked about that early in his career was Sidney Crosby. Mm-hmm. When he had his first injury and he was out, I think he was only out for like a week or maybe even just a few games. And he's used to playing every game, obviously, and playing big minutes. And Crosby talked about, you know, this is the first time that I had to actually sit down and watch games and watch what was going on out there. And when you're playing, like you're in the NHL, everything is fast. Like it's happening so suddenly. You feel like you have no time. Like the gap is so tight. You got to make a play right away. And Crosby's point coming out of it was that the injury was actually a blessing in disguise because it forced him to sit up top and watch the game. And what he realized was it may feel like I don't have any time when I'm on the ice, but I actually do. I just don't see it because I'm on the ice. But from watching up top, like you do have that extra little bit of time to make a play, shift your shoulders, do whatever. Yeah. And it wasn't until he actually sat down and was able to watch the game that he realized, hold on a second, it seems like it's quick chaos out there, but it's not. I got a little bit of time here.
Yeah, I love the word I was looking for before is poise, right? Where you're just, you know, you don't feel like you have to get rid of it as soon as you touch it. And that's a trend you see in third line guys and guys who say pucks in deep a lot. They just get it over the red, get it in deep, get it moving forward. You know, like coach is going to bench me, move it forward. You know, but the best players who are allowed to make mistakes, and this is something where somewhere coaches make a big difference. If you have a coach that makes guys feel like they're not going to bench them for mistakes, they'll hang on to the puck for the extra second. And sometimes that burns you, but it doesn't always end up in your net. It's the good thing is, though, most of the time that extra second is valuable and helps you find the puck, you know, find a better spot for the puck and helps the offense. So this is more of a new age coaching thing. Just try to give your guys that confidence.
You know who doesn't help that situation, like, at all?
Your inner running monologue that says, panic!
Us.
Oh, yeah.
You know why? Because whenever there's a turnover, we'll show it.
Yeah.
But whenever there's, like, hang on for next split second, like, the way I've always looked at it is by way of percentages. Like, on television, we will show the play that leads to a scoring chance. Like the mistake, the turnover underneath the blue line that leads to a scoring chance. We'll show that nonstop. Oh, look at this bad play, bad puck management, etc. But if you have that same player and you say, you know what, by hanging on to the puck, he's going to create 10 scoring opportunities, but he's going to cost you 3 the other way. Mm-hmm. Like with percentages like that, you win most of your hockey games if everyone is at that percentage on those margins. But what do?
to cut us a little slack, like no one wants to watch us show highlights of a guy waiting for a good outlet pass, you know, like it's not as exciting. So it is a matter of, you know, I'm sure there's some word for the psychological position we're in where like you can see the bad thing happen, but it's not always as exciting or noticeable when the good thing happens. And I'm sure it's some sort of confirmation bias or something. But, yeah, no, it's tough to remind yourself that patience is worthwhile, even if it burns you sometimes.
You have a thought on Vancouver? I don't know what more we can say. Well, that's just it, right? Given everything that that organization has gone through all season long. And I get that some of the wounds are self-inflicted, certainly. But, man, and just watching. Like, they hung in there for the first 20 minutes against Toronto. And then it's just like the Maple Leafs have this way of playing and they don't panic and they just keep on and it's relentless. And then it almost seems as if the minute Matthews scores, Vancouver just says, oh, well, this thing's over.
You know what's different about this Leafs team is in the past you used to get upset about them playing down to opponents all the time. You know, all of a sudden it's a close game late in the third and you're putting pressure on the top guys to find a goal. You know, that's not really the case this year. It's like they get up a goal or two early, and then you see them just kind of coast. You know, just dishearten the team, and you can sail from there. So, yeah, to the point about Vancouver, it's like there's not much to fight for at this point. Everyone's kind of torn down, beaten up, and it just feels like a cruel experiment to make them get through this. But, you know, I guess not playing was not a good alternative either. So They'll get through it. They'll be okay at the end of the day, but certainly not a fun stretch ahead for them.
Sucks for the players, sucks for the coach too. That's someone that I really feel for through all of this. Like that game last week against Ottawa when he's just laying into his bench.
Hey, he's trying. Give him credit.
He is trying, but there's nothing there. Like these guys are beaten down and exhausted.
Yeah. No, that was the end of the energy reserves. And like at some point you can only squeeze so much out of these guys. So yeah, I mean, sometimes life just kicks you in your town. I hope the Canucks can find a couple of wins and keep things positive.
Here's a question for you. Can Connor McDavid score 13 points in his last 7 games?
I mean, I would bet it's more likely to happen than it is to not happen.
He gets to 100 points?
He's a superstar. He's going to end the season with 100, not 101 or 99.
He's going to end right on the button?
Yeah, he's just one of those guys that, like, you know, superstars have this weird thing about them. You cannot tell me that's not wildly important to him. He knows he's going to go down as one of the all-time greats, and it would 100%. Be an unbelievable accomplishment.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he has that sense about him of like, and make no mistake about it, as much as I'm sure he's a very supportive teammate, etc., I'm sure he wasn't exactly thrilled how the conversation turned away from him and onto Leon Draisaitl last year. Listen, man, Draisaitl had a great year. But this almost seems as if this whole season has been Connor McDavid reminding people who the best player is.
Yeah, you know, that was always one of the knocks against Draisaitl. It's just like, you don't believe Draisaitl happens to the magnitude he happened last year without Connor. You always feel like Connor is inevitable. You know, regardless of who else is on his team, he's going to happen. So good to see him reclaim his throne as the best player in the league and the Oilers for sure.
And it was the Battle of Alberta game that was the final nail. It was for me. And I know you're probably there before I was, but that was it.
Yeah.
That was it for me for the Flames, was Saturday.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens now. Like, large decisions. You know, Tree Living's got to figure out what they're going to do because this didn't work. It's not like it was a powerhouse division or, you know, they had a harder hand dealt to them than anyone else. So I'm not sure which way they go, but I'm not sure Johnny Gaudreau plays next season for the Calgary Flames.
There's two teams that are obvious right now, and there might be more that emerge depending on what happens in the playoffs. What are you saying to yourself? You expect some deep cuts here in the offseason. One of them is the Calgary Flames, and the other is the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The Flyers. What a weird year. Like
Chuck Fletcher is gonna cut. I don't know. You're not gonna cut to the bone, but I mean, you got a lot of good players on this team. There's gonna be, like, we always talk about, oh, this is the last hurrah for the core of that Calgary Flames team. How'd you like to be the Philadelphia Flyers right now?
Well, now Giroux and, you know, even Voracek, you worry that like these guys have aged out of their window a little bit here. And you know, they were a team that many people thought could win that division this year.
Hey, you're right here. Tough.
Yeah.
This guy. And I picked the goalie for the Vezina. I picked Carter Hart for that.
Yeah.
That's why I don't ask me questions. Well. Like, that's got to be front and center, right? For the Philadelphia Flyers, like, outside of who you're going to lose in the expansion draft, is what are we doing with the goalie here?
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything gets undone.
We've heard a case made for him by a couple of people that it's. you know, it's not time. Mike Fiuta was making the case that it's not time to cut bait on this guy after a bad year.
Oh, God, no.
Tough position he was in. So I still think he's a really good goaltender waiting to happen. That team this year, just everything that could go wrong did go wrong. That fan base, yes, that fan base about their team, they're just disgusted by the group and the way things went this season. I think probably the biggest fall or like failure to meet expectations had to be Philly this year. Like,
yep.
Can you think of another team that had higher expectations?
You look at teams that are out, and you might say, well, based on a little bit of success in the postseason, you might say Columbus. But then you had the Pierre-Luc Dubois drama. You had benchings all year. You had some trades in the offseason. They lose Josh Anderson. Like,
talk yourself into the Canucks after playoffs last year, maybe.
Maybe, but I don't think anyone thought that the PDO bender was going to continue with the Vancouver Canucks. Like, there was going to be a step back. It looked like Philadelphia was taking that next step.
Yeah.
Like, okay, here comes.
They thought Provorov was going to be a Norris guy, and that
didn't happen
this year.
The thing about Provorov had a decent season. It didn't really work with him and Philip Myers. I'll tell you, the one main thing about Philadelphia was they couldn't defend. Like, that became obvious as the thing sort of spiraled out of control.
They had so many names that you thought were going to be, like, quality NHL D-men for a long time.
But you know what? You just talked about veteran players a second ago, Borny, and I wonder if they never really got over the fact that Matt Niskanen said, "That's it, I'm done."
Yeah, that hurt.
How much of an effect that is. Like, Niskanen, listen, very quietly in the last 10 years, no matter where he's gone, Niskanen has made everybody better. Like, every blue line he's part of improved, and partners he played with improved.
He's one of the guys, by the way, and this is sounds like a weird thing to say, but one of the few guys I played against in college that I was like, yeah, I don't know, he's okay, I don't see it. And then, like, a few years later, I was like, oh my God, he's incredible. Well, he just had so many, you know, you only play these guys a handful of times a year. And he's a defenseman, so if it didn't happen those games, like, you know, it wasn't like I was watching college hockey highlights, you know, in 2007, between, you know, or whatever. So, anyway, he was a guy that really surprised me and became just an incredible NHLer. What a career he's had since, and that was a dagger for Philly for sure.
That was a tough one. So a couple of clinching scenarios tonight in the NHL. By the way, 14 games tonight. Like, you thought Saturday was busy, 14 games tonight, Borny. The Boston Bruins clinch if they get 1 point against the New Jersey Devils tonight, or the Washington Capitals beat the New York Rangers in any fashion. Listen, Boston's grabbing that spot. Rangers aren't even playing. Like, there's no Panarin, there's no Kreider, there's no Trouba, there's no Lindgren, there's no Howden.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I know, right? they've just said, okay, this season is done. You know, that you might make the argument that everyone thought that the Rangers were going to take that next step. Maybe.
Yeah, I did. I thought this was a successful season for them.
But it looks like, Boston just needs a point or some help from the out-of-town scoreboard with the Washington Capitals, and they get in. Jeremy Swayman starts tonight for the Boston Bruins. You have a thought on the Bees? We'll get more into NHL stuff with CJ here at the bottom, but... How much of a threat are they in that division? It seems like the minute that Taylor Hall got comfortable with David Krejci, some things started to change in Boston.
Yeah. Let me give some love to my Islanders fans by saying that the Rangers are neither going to make playoffs or get a good draft pick. So, successful year for the Islanders. Woo! but on to Boston.
I'm glad the pettiness has never left.
Yeah. No, that's an ideal season out of the Rangers if you're an Islanders fan. But yes, Boston with a legitimate second line now, like Hall and Krejci together. Like, what a lovely pair to add behind the old perfection line, you know, depending how they choose to arrange them with Pasternak and all that. But yeah, they feel like a legitimate threat, knowing they can get saves and they can put the puck in the net with those guys. You know, they're not as formidable as I would have seen them in the past. They're still, they lack the depth that I feel like they had in their sort of heyday here, but it certainly makes them no pushover at this point. And you know, like we talk about with Ovechkin and Crosby, I feel like you got to push your chips in as long as you have that top line. So good for them continuing to push.
I think Brandon Carlo might be in as early as tonight as well. So they'll get another legit blue line. That is huge. But you're right. Like, that second line with Hall, Krejci, and Craig Smith. Craig Smith, by the way.
It's great.
No one ever says a word. Not a peep. you know, outside of the production line. This guy's got 13 goals, just had a hat trick. Like, he's
if you were going to design a guy who you, you know, a generic guy whose name you wouldn't remember, you'd make it Craig Smith. I mean, that's, he's, it's practically a,
okay.
You know,
all right. Okay. Here's, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I've maintained, because I'm fascinated with the plain name superstar.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a lot of guys with like super cool names that are like,
Mika Zibanejad.
Like, right. Like destined to be a superstar because their name screams superstar. Is there a more generically named superstar in the history? I'm not just talking about hockey here. In the history of sports, okay? Big one for you, Borny. Then this one. Larry Bird.
Yeah, that's not generic. Bird is, that's a different handle right there.
Larry Bird. Like, if he wasn't like Larry Bird, like stand up for the Celts, like Hall of Fame, championships, all of it. Is that name popping on a game sheet?
Well, Bird gets me. You know, like, you give me a Smith or a Jones. Whoever the most famous Smith or Jones or, I don't know, maybe a
Craig
Campbell
Smith
in
is
hockey.
Really good.
Craig
like, you're
Smith
right. Like, as far
generic.
As like the plain name superstars go, Craig Smith is right there.
It's no Ovechkin, that's for sure. So
no, right?
Like, but anyway, he is
the top names. Like, but he's good, man. Like, that was a great signing by the.
Yeah, he's done really well for the Bees and kind of an unheralded. We haven't talked about my other divisions all that much, but he's been good for the Bees. He continues to create a lot of chances for them and gives them a quality depth scoring option on a team that right now kind of lacks him. Interesting to see what becomes of Jake DeBrusque in that team at some point.
Yes, it's been in the lineup, out of the lineup, healthy scratched. That is a difficult situation right now. 4 goals and 11 points in 35 games for Jake DeBrusque as we speak. Real quick, before we get to the bottom of the hour break, CJ on the other side. We talked about the Maple Leafs. Tonight they'll face off against Montreal Canadiens. Watch it on Sportsnet Ontario. The beginning of a little 3-game mini set between these two teams to conclude the season. What do you make of Montreal? Like, Nick Suzuki's playing really good hockey. You know what? Can I get your thought on 3-on-3 overtime?
Just in general?
Yeah.
Oh, what's better? What's better? It's amazing.
Really?
You don't like it?
I don't like where it's evolved to.
Yeah.
Like, the Cole Caulfield goal was great. Like, great read by Petrie. Boom, gets it over Caulfield. Awesome. Wonderful play. But before that, first of all, it's slow. It's hold on to the puck. It's neutral zone regroup after neutral zone regroup. Like, when it started, remember when 3-on-3 started, we were all excited because, oh, no coach can get their hooks into this. This is great. 5 minutes up and down, back and forth, scoring chances, odd man rushes. Woo, party time. Rock and roll, NHL. Woo, this is fun. Now, one team gets possession. Everybody sets up, and you just look to force a mistake. Like, someone misses a switch. It's a bad line change. Nobody wants to fire from the side anymore because they don't want to give up the odd man rush. You just hold on to the puck. If you don't have a play, you go back to the neutral zone and go back at it again. And it's so much slower than everything else in the game.
Yeah.
I hate where it's gotten. I hate it.
Yeah, to the point you're making, like, they're knowing guys aren't going to waste possessions on bad shots, you could really sag back low to the middle. Like, the three of you can kind of pack it in the D zone and give the guys all the room they want to skate around the outside, because we know you're not going to shoot it from out there, you know, until you can get to the inside. So nothing comes off ozone possessions, right? It all comes off change of possessions and rush plays. But I still love it. I still love the idea that if you beat one guy, it's an odd man rush. Like, I still love that, you know, we inevitably get some of those up and downs, but it has gotten a little bit cautious. I think there is going to be room for a team to say, you know, to take advantage of that, basically, and be more aggressive and press a little bit more. I'm not sure exactly what the... you know,
who's
the final...
that team? Because everyone's playing the same way now in OT. Everyone's so safe.
Yeah, I still love it, but I get your point. What I think's fun about it is everyone is forced to give up the puck in 5-on-5 hockey so quickly. No, you know, you look at like SportLogic stats, who had the puck the most tonight? They'd be like, Nylander by a mile. He had it for 51 seconds. It's like, and truly, that's like, those are the totals of the people who have it the most. You'll have a guy have it for 2.5 minutes in overtime. So you get to see guys think with the puck, hold the puck, you know, and try to make plays. And it's just something different, and it showcases the skill in the game in a different way. I still really love it.
All right, so you're still on board. We'll see. I'm going to open up with CJ about that and what he thinks of overtime right now. Because, man, I always get so excited when I see it. And then, like, the first couple of minutes, I'm like, oh, another regroup. Oh, another, oh, pulling it out of the zone. Oh, please do something.
It is okay, bad. There should be something like you can't take it back past your own. I don't know. We're going to ruin the game by putting in rules.
Berkey always talk about shot clock.
I hate that in overtime. I
hate the fact that we have to have the conversation about it. Yeah. I hate the fact that it's gotten to a place where we have to say things like, maybe there should be a shot clock in overtime.
Well, you know what the damn solution is? Can I say damn? I just did. You know what the solution is here, Jeff? It's just correct the point system. 3-2-1. 3 if you win in regulation, 2 if you win in overtime. I don't know. Can you do 2? I guess it's still, you got to give them 2 at a shootout win, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that system. I don't know. We got to find a way to better reward. Yeah,
I got a better one. Let me ask you this question point blank. Would hockey be more exciting if there were no coaches?
No, because there would still be coaches. They would just be in player gear.
They'd be in player gear, but there'd be more mistakes.
Yeah, I still think you end up playing a system. I just think it's a whole evolutionary process where you just find, you know, you got to have structure. We're going to get beat. I think it all just would take shape again. You can blow the monster up, but it's going to reassemble.
Well, that's not a fun answer. Jeez,
well,
Marty.
In theory, no coaching is great for sure. But there's too much on the line for teams who want to win to them just go, let's just play no system.
Yeah, woo. Okay, hit a break. Chris Johnston on the other side will have the 3-on-3 overtime conversation, a tour around the NHL where really there's only one playoff race. There's a lot of races for positioning and who's going to play who in the opening round. But Dallas, Nashville, that's it. And we'll get to that on Hockey Central with Chris Johnston here in a couple of moments. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, starting at noon. Hockey Central, Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Warren. Pleased to be joined now by Chris Johnston of the NHL on Sportsnet and Headlines as part of Hockey Night in Canada. CJ, how are you today, bud?
I'm doing well, guys. Tapping.
Now, quick question for you. After your marathon last week, and congratulations, as always, you talked about, on our podcast, you talked about still keeping the streak alive. Have you been consistent since?
I have, yep. 4 for 4 in the days since. So
you went the day after?
He went the day after, yes. Justin. Yeah.
How short?
Yeah, 3.5K the day after, then 7.5, 7.5, and 10 today. So.
Wow.
What do you think of that, Justin?
That's incredible. I got heat off the top of the show because he called you a noted marathoner. I was like, I don't know if he's a noted marathoner, but I didn't realize. How many do you have under your belt at this point?
5 full marathons now.
And which tell was your us about how the money went. You guys raised money for Conquer COVID-19, right?
Yeah, we did. And it's funny. I actually got a note this morning, and I guess some of the donations are still coming in. So they're at 15,000, give or take, and counting. And, awesome. You know, obviously that's what's important. It's pretty cool that happened. I'm impressed that people stepped up, and I thank everyone who's shown their support in that way.
It's outstanding. Listen, well done on all accounts. One, for taking care of yourself, and two, for, you know, using your desire to help take care of yourself physically to help other people. Like, I think a lot of people are sort of in the mind of like, okay, I need to stay healthy through all this. It's a challenging time. And you've actually used that to help other people. And listen, CJ, I'm not in the minority here on this one. Good for you, man. You've managed to help a lot of people, not just yourself, through all of this. So well done, bud. Wanted to start this discussion with you about your thoughts on overtime in the NHL right now. Do you enjoy it as much as you did when it started? Or do you say, much like I have here, there's only so many neutral zone regroups I can watch in 5 minutes? Where are you on OT?
I have to say, it doesn't bother me. You know, I certainly not as exciting. I mean, the novelty goes away, much like maybe the divisional alignments, you know, has become a little less exciting as the season's gone on. And I was a big proponent early on about the North Division in particular and liking seeing all the Canadian teams so much. I think that that 3-on-3 overtime certainly had a sort of flavor of the few more in a week, but you know what I'm saying, kind of feel to it. I still prefer it to the shootout, though, I have to say. And I don't know what the numbers are, but it feels like I'm not seeing too many shootouts these days, anecdotally speaking. And so, yeah, it might not be perfect. I'm open to tweaks. It's certainly not holy. It's only a couple of years we've had it. I don't mind contemplating something else, but I don't like seeing games solved in the shootout.
We'll keep it in the Canadian division here and just talk about the Canucks a little bit. Obviously, some concerning news, a story out of Vancouver with Jake Virtanen being on leave from the team. Can you tell us anything about that situation and what's going on with the Canucks and Virtanen?
Well, you know, obviously, as the Canucks announced, he's on leave, you know, basically an indefinite leave. I don't think that there's a time frame placed on that, Justin. And you know, really what needs to happen now is an investigation. The team's retained a third party to conduct that investigation, to see what happens. You know, I'm not sure if the alleged victim in this case is you know, speaking to the investigators as part of that or not. I'm sure that would probably, you know, be a big difference between what the outcome might be, you know, depending on what can be brought up in that manner. You know, I do know that she spoke anonymously with a reporter out in Vancouver, Lana Kelly of Glacier Media. But really, I guess everything is kind of on pause when it comes to that situation while the investigators do their work. And, you know, whatever becomes of that will dictate what happens next for Virtanen and the Canucks. But, you know, it seems as though this is a situation, obviously, that the organization took very seriously, the league did as well. And we just sort of to wait to let, I guess, everything run its course, you know, from the legal standpoint.
Absolutely. We were talking about the Vancouver Canucks off the top, and I can't remember. What was the word that you used, Justin, like how you would feel about the Vancouver Canucks right now? What was it? Sympathy?
Sympathy, yeah.
Like for everything that this team has gone through this entire season, and they're going to finish it up by playing, like, just to be blunt, CJ, a bunch of empty calorie games here towards the finish. You have a thought on what we just saw this season from Vancouver?
I mean, I think it's a bit of a surprise, to be honest. I mean, they were, if you go back a year ago, and let's be clear, we're being separate from the Virtanen situation, which I think is different than obviously the COVID outbreak and everything. But, you know, if we're just talking about sort of the organization and what's happened, I mean, they were a great story in the bubble in Edmonton. You know, they somehow got that series to seven games with Vegas. And, you know, when you get to a seventh game, even when you're being outshot the way they were in that series, you got a chance to win it. And you know, to have, you know, Elias Pettersson, for example, be injured most of the year, you know, he got off to a slow start too. I mean, you wouldn't want that to happen. Then the COVID outbreak has obviously completely derailed any chance they might have had to get back in the playoff picture. I mean, it was going to be tough either way, but you know, that you know, had some pretty serious implications on kind of the direction of the season. And I think there's a lot of questions still hanging over where this thing goes. They have a coaching staff without contracts, which has been a big storyline for a long time there. But I think it's going to become quite acute here with, you know, 2 to 3 weeks left in their season. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be tough for them now to play out this string. I mean, we're going to see, almost certainly we're going to see playoff games start within the U.S. before the Canucks are done their season, and potentially we might even see some North Division playoff games played while the Canucks are still finishing out the regular season, depending on, you know, where things stand at that point. And so that kind of says it all. I mean, just you know, tough time for the organization, and then they got some big decisions ahead with, you know, Quinn Hughes and Pettersson needing contracts and, you know, finding a way to build a better team around those players.
CJ, what do you think the third round of playoffs is going to look like for a Canadian team and just around the league in terms of fans? So, you know, do we imagine a Canadian team is going to be able to play in Canada? I know it's impossible to know, but just your speculation. And in terms of fans, like, I've heard Dallas had considered having a packed building, you know, if they were to make it to the playoffs. So what do you expect to see in the postseason?
Yeah, it's going to be challenging for whatever Canadian team emerges. I think that's fair to say. I mean, almost for certain, whoever they're playing is going to have some amount of fans and potentially half-filled building to a full building when they play on the road. And then the question is, where do they play their quote-unquote home games? And you know, I think it's notable that the league is still hopeful or would like to see the Canadian teams remain home right through the playoffs, you know, including that third round. You know, it's going to take some sort of arrangement with the government, concession, whatever you want to call it, you know, much like they've got the working quarantines now down to 7 days for players across the border before the trade deadline, down from 14 days. You know, they're going to need some kind of an agreement where, you know, the American team would be able to fly in and play games in Canada. You know, but I think that the feeling is that that might be possible, A, because many of the American teams are pretty much fully vaccinated and probably more than will be by the time we're talking about, you know, a third round playoff, you know, some point in June. Mm-hmm. And, you know, essentially these teams would be existing in the same bubbles that you know, the current Canadian teams do. They'll stay in a certain hotel. They won't be mixing with the public and those types of things. So, you know, that's the big question, is whether the government will, you know, eventually agree to some sort of plan that allows that to happen. But, you know, the league can leave the door open to that, I think, for another month here before they sort of need an answer. And, you know, let's hope lots of people keep getting vaccinated here across Canada, that the numbers decline among the general population, and maybe we're in a better spot to have that happen. And you know, but either way, I don't know if we'll see any Canadian teams have fans in their buildings in the playoffs. I mean, yeah. If one is going to do it, I could see it happening in Alberta. You know, I think that the government there is more open to it or in maybe in a position to do it. I recognize today as I'm speaking that, you know, Alberta has, you know, the highest caseload percentage. Yeah. But, you know, there's maybe a chance of it if Edmonton gets to the third round. But, you know, otherwise, basically, let's go off our assumptions here. I think the Canadian team will be playing home games probably either in another city in the U.S. with no fans or in their own city with no fans, and they're going to have to go on the road to play against potentially a full building. It's just mm-hmm. you know, it's an unusual situation, but that's where we're at right now.
It's an unusual season, and everyone knew that going in. I want to ask you about one of the big headlines towards the end of last week, and that is the final payment by Seattle. So now they are officially team number 32. They can go to meetings. They can sign players. Business operations for that organization, as far as hockey goes, started late last week. I wonder about this. Given what we saw from Vegas after the expansion draft, namely going all the way to the Stanley Cup final, I don't know that anyone expects Seattle to duplicate that, but there's probably some pressure on Seattle to be competitive right out of the gate. Here's my question. Ron Francis, general manager of the Seattle Kraken, does he look at the expansion draft and subsequent side deals that you can do with teams in a universe that has a flat cap and say to himself, we could be good now, or using our cap space, help relieve teams of certain contractual burdens and pick up high picks and prospects along the way, we might be really good here to target a year like 2026 or 2027 to be a real good team. Do you think they're more tuned in with being good now, being good later, or both?
I think they want the best of both worlds. I mean, they're not trying to build a Stanley Cup contender for next season just because I think even with some of the advantages they have, namely, you know, as we're talking right now, they don't have one bad contract on the books. They are going to have this expansion draft event in which they're able to harvest assets from other teams, and they're going to get some good players there. Obviously, they can be players in free agency probably far more than most organizations around the league. You know, I think that there's a recognition, though. It's still replicating what Vegas did. Let's face it, in our lifetime, we'll probably never see something like that. But, yeah. You know, I think that there's a way for them to be competitive in the short term. You know, and sometimes taking on those contractual complications, burdens, whatever we want to call them, is still you're still getting good hockey players. It's just sure. that the other teams, you know, whether it's a team like Tampa, for example, probably the easiest one to point to since, you know, they have a payroll of about $100 million this year with their long-term injured reserve situation. I mean, they've got lots of good players that they'd love to keep in a perfect world, but, you know, they're going to have another, you know, more cap problems again this offseason. I mean, maybe there's a way to get one of their decent players and you know, also get a pick and free them of that burden, just to name one team one way. And so you're still getting a future asset, which is going to help towards the 2026 time you're pointing to. I mean, to me, I really think that the most interesting decisions are all going to be around that cap space. Because Vegas, let's face it, they changed plans. I mean, they came out of their expansion draft, I believe, with, I think, I actually looked this up recently, I think it was 13 or 14 extra picks that they got basically through the expansion draft process, plus all the players. And, you know, what they ended up doing, because they got to the cup final that first year, is they ended up trading a lot of those picks, or trading some of the prospects like Eric Brandstrom or Nick Suzuki in the deals they made subsequent. And now they're a team that, you know, has some cap challenges. They're one of the best teams in the league. They could win the Stanley Cup again this year. I mean, I don't criticize those decisions, but I'm merely highlighting that they kind of started off, I think, you know, with an idea that they would be competitive further down the road, but the plan changed based on what happened. And so, you know, I think Seattle will be very protective of the cap space. Yes, they might take on, you know, a couple of those kind of contracts you're talking about, but I don't think it'll be too much, because, you know, over time that cap, if they have lots of room, I mean, that's going to be something they can use to their advantage, not just in July at the expansion draft, but for years to come. And so I think we'll see a more traditional expansion experience from them than what we saw from the Golden Knights.
Interesting. CJ, as always, full value. Thanks so much for popping by, pal. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, All right, CJ. Guys. Have a good day.
There he is, the great Chris Johnston, noted Barney Marathon.
Yes, very noted. Five times.
That's our guy.
So
yeah, wild. when I first met CJ, he was running all the time. I think he had just run Chicago when I first met CJ. Oh yeah, man. Oh, the guy's great. Good on CJ.
I should do it. I'm motivated right now. I should run.
You're running now, right? Like, you're a runner now, aren't you?
I ran during the pandemic when I had one kid, and then when I had two,
that was it.
Yeah.
Okay. You just sprint from emergency to next emergency.
Yeah,
that's what you become. We'll hit a break. Leafs and Habs tonight, 1-14 on the board around the NHL. And a pretty interesting evening, big one between Dallas is fighting for a playoff spot. We'll see if we have time to squeeze that in next. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So, Borny just mentioned before the break, 14 games tonight around the NHL. And the return of Yevgeny Malkin to the Pittsburgh Penguins lineup as the Penguins face off against the Philadelphia Flyers. So, big news there for the Penguinos. Also, Dallas and Florida. Dallas 3 points back of the Nashville Predators for that fourth and final playoff spot. Face off against the Cats. Spencer Knight gets a start for Florida. Sam Bennett day-to-day with the upper body injury. The Holla goal on Saturday was a dagger. What are you feeling between Dallas and Nashville here, Borny?
Yeah, this is one of the places you get two teams hungry for points. Florida's tied with Tampa Bay in the 2-3 spot there. I think it's going to be a close hockey game. My bet tonight is Jets plus 1.5, Stars plus 1.5 there. I like them to come out on top.
Leafs and Habs this evening. Watch that one on Sportsnet Ontario. Plenty of hockey. We are back tomorrow with more Hockey Central. Smith and Jones next on The Fan.